Focus Perth with Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth.
And let's get to our panel discussion this morning on Focus. Now, have you heard the story of the 30-year-old man who's retired? He owns his own house plus an investment property, and he has $600,000 in the bank. And he probably lived with his parents rent-free for ages, right? Inherited some money, probably got lucky with some investments. Well, what if I told you he just saved really, really hard? Now, that is the story of American blogger Peter Adonai, and he is also known as Mr. Money Moustache, and he is on fire. That's right, fire. It's a financial movement that he made popular in the United States and is gaining traction here in Australia. And FIRE stands for Financial Independence, Retire Early. And if you think you've missed the boat, my guest this morning will tell you it is never too late to get ahead. This is today's focus. And welcome back to Lacey Filipich. She's the founder and director of Money School. And Lacey breaks all the rules when it comes to talking about money, which is why we invite her back time and time again on the program. And today, Lacey has brought her mum along, Fran White. And there is a reason why Fran is here. We'll get to that in a moment. But I want to hear from you today. If you have a dream or a plan to retire early, how are you going to save the money you need to make it happen? I would love to hear from you this morning. Can you live frugally? Can you save the money you need for an early retirement and a comfortable one? The numbers are 1300 222 720, or you can send a text on 0437 922 720. And Lacey and Fran, good morning and welcome. Fran, first of all, tell me about Peter Adonai, this American blogger who retired very comfortably at 30. What is his story?
He's got an amazing story, and being an engineer, I can relate to it because he is also a software engineer. And basically, as soon as he started work, he stopped spending so much money. I don't know that he ever spent a lot before, but saved 60% of everything he earned, which sounds like a heap of money to most people. Think about living on 40% of your income. That's what he did for 10 years and squirreled that money away, saved it, invested it. He was big on index funds and an investment property. And then at 30 years old, he discovered he had enough income, and he talks about something called a safe withdrawal rate of 4%, and he can live on 4% of what his assets produce. So that's the rent and the dividends from his index fund. He also lives on about $25,000 to $27,000 US a year, which is pretty low. It's about half of what most people would live on over there. But he does that because he is so frugal.
How did he do it, though? Because that, when you take into account mortgage and things like that, how do you live on that amount of money?
I know, it's pretty extraordinary, isn't it? It is extraordinary.
Sounds great in theory.
Absolutely. And I think most people, if they were thinking about living on 40% of their income, might have a heart attack because we do have a habit of living to whatever we've got. If we've got 100% of our income in our bank account, we generally, human nature is to spend that amount. I think if you think back, and I can do this pretty easily, thinking about university when you lived on maybe, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 a year, and suddenly you graduate and you might be earning $50,000 a year. But I think what he did was stick to the way of living that it was like when he was on that $10,000 to $15,000 a year when he was a university student. So he didn't go and buy an expensive car. He didn't go and buy lots of expensive food.
He rode his bike instead of drove.
Exactly.
They did a lot of things at home rather than going out.
Exactly. Yeah. So he kept that habit of not spending too much money up. And I think what happens with most of us, I've had that experience. You get a big paycheck and you go, oh, look at all the amazing things. I can buy more expensive cheese. I can have a nicer car. I can take a better holiday. He just didn't do that and saved really diligently. So when he bought his house, he didn't have a mortgage for long. He was able to pay it off really quickly.
Because they pumped that cash into the mortgage.
Exactly. And when we think about the house we might buy, like an average house in Perth might be $500,000. He went for a much cheaper version.
That's what he has done, is basically the basis of this FIRE movement, this new thing that's taken the US by storm.
Absolutely. And he's one of, I think there's several examples of this. The idea actually came out in the early 90s. There were a pair of people, Vicky Robin and Joe Dominguez, who wrote a book about it. And I think it's called Your Money or Your Life. And that's sort of credited as the beginning of the movement. It's just that now that we have blogs and the internet, people like Mr. Money Moustache and the Frugal Woods are two very good examples. And there are plenty more of them out there that you can follow online who are putting that idea into practice. And it's the same for all of them. Don't spend much money, save as much as you can, invest those savings, and eventually you won't need a wage to support yourself. You'll live off the income from your assets.
But what age do you have to be doing that? Because when I've looked at the Frugal Woods and looked at some of the blogs and the online articles about these people, and they tend to be sort of these urban professionals in their 30s, a couple of kids. They seem to have done this at quite a young age.
Yeah, they have. And they're pretty lucky in that case because they've started so young and kept that spending very low. I think what I have observed, and Fran probably is a good example of this, is it doesn't matter when you start. It's a matter of it'll take you somewhere between 10 and 20 years to get there, depending on how ambitious your savings is. So, for example, Fran started in her late 40s, got there in her mid-60s. I started in my late teens, got there in my early 30s. So it's really about when you start. There's no rule about what point you have to start at.
And Pam on the text asks if Peter Adonai had children when he did this.
I think he had children I think he had children in between when he was becoming financially independent. So I think his son is something like 10 years old now and he's in his early 40s. So it might have been just after he became independent.
Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth and on the ABC Listen app.
Fran. Hello, welcome. Hello. Lacey, why have you brought your mum in today?
Well, she's pretty inspirational, first of all, and I know I'm biased, but I have had others agree. My mum is an excellent example of someone who came to FIRE late in life, and a lot of people, you know, you've just had that example. You've seen the Frugal Woods and Mr. My Mustache, and they're young. And so a lot of people I speak to go, yeah, but I'm in my 40s or 50s. I can't do that. And my
mum
is
20 years too late.
Exactly. And Fran is living, breathing proof that it is never too late.
Okay, Fran, your story, because it's an interesting one. Single mum at 40, raising your two daughters, Lacey and her sister. How financially, what was your situation back then?
Pretty difficult, very low income. I was only working part-time and barely surviving. At that stage of life, there wasn't a single spare dollar left over at the end of the week in those days. And it was, I'm sure a lot of people will identify with that. It is a struggle, even for two people trying to support kids and go through the high school, you know, and onto the university stages. It's money out generally equals the money in situation. And I can honestly say I didn't even give much of a thought to what I was going to live on later on in life at that stage.
So it was kind of everything you earned, you spent. It's kind of that hand to mouth sort of living, isn't it?
Absolutely. I was probably in a better situation than some people because I had got into owning a house with my first husband, and from the time that I first owned a house, I always had a house that I owned together with the bank that I was dealing with at the time, but a roof over my head, and that was my eventual starting point for achieving financial independence.
Okay. So was that the key for you to be able to turn things around?
Absolutely. At the time that we separated and I had to make some changes in my life, I bought a much cheaper house with my share of the sale of the first property that we'd owned. And I knew I could manage the mortgage repayments even on that cheaper property on a much lesser wage.
So you have to be realistic about that, don't you?
Very realistic. It's keeping up appearances was no longer an issue. It was existing and making sure that I didn't go into more debt and managing to meet the mortgage repayments and keep a roof over our heads. Tough but not impossible, and a joy every step of the way also.
And so did you have money left over that you were able to put in the bank?
Not at that stage, not until I was in my late 40s and both of the girls were finished high school.
So your expenses dropped significantly.
Significantly.
Because you're out the door, right, Lacey?
Yes, we were.
Exactly. And a lot of people will know what that's all about too. Suddenly you have more time to work. So I was by then obviously working full time, getting paid a lot more money. I didn't have the same kind of expenditure, and that was the first time that I really had some spare money to think about doing things with. So at that stage, late 40s, was when I started investing in other things. I bought some shares and then I bought a rental property, and it went from there to with pretty strict financial controls still in place, but that's my path.
And that was all geared towards being able to fund your retirement?
It was, yes. Yes, rental property was and still remains, I believe, one of the easiest ways to make larger chunks of money. Shares, obviously, you do get returns on, but
it's a gamble.
It's always a gamble. Even property's a gamble. There are a lot of people in Perth now that are selling their properties for less than they paid for them. So it's not a guaranteed, but it's still a good vehicle most of the time.
And on that point, and we actually spoke about this on the program last week, where people sometimes think that you can flip a property pretty quickly, but you prepared and sort of realised that it's like a 20-year investment.
Yeah, 7 to 10 years, I think, with property is the minimum. Yeah,
but even that's not working now for some.
Yeah, true. And certainly markets change, and they've changed a lot all over Australia in different ways.
I would absolutely agree with that. I think people that think they're going to take a property and very quickly within 12 months flip it forget that there are things like the stamp duty, the agent selling fees, those kinds of things are massive capital costs. So even if property was going up, it has to go up very swiftly to recover those costs. And you have to do some pretty significant improvement, which is hard to do unless you're a trade professional.
1300 222 720 is the number. If you have a question for Lacey or for Fran about the FIRE movement, this financial independence, retiring early, and it's about saving money, isn't it? This is the key to this movement, is about saving money. I want to speak to Bob. Bob's got a story about being frugal. Hello, Bob. Let's try Bob again. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Ah, my buttons are working now. How are you doing?
I'm fit and well. I'm alive. And that's a great way to start the day.
Indeed it is.
I'd like to tell a story about being frugal and that, and there's quite a bit here. My parents came out here in 1951. I was 19. My brother, Gilchrist, was only 17. Dad bought a rundown dairy farm. He couldn't get anything in Scotland, and he came out here, and all his savings, and he bought a rundown dairy farm. He, my brother, myself, and my mum, we used to get up at 5 in the morning, milk the cows. There was other siblings. My sister was only a year old. We tried to get into the house after milking the cows, feeding the pigs, and separating the milk and everything at 10 to 7. That gave us 20 minutes to have breakfast, 20 minutes to ride our push bikes into the mill, where we worked till 7:30 till 4:30, come back out, milked, worked on the weekend. Dad would not take any money from either Gilchrist or I while we were working there. I get choked up on this, emotional. I went driving bulldozers after a bit, but my brother, he stayed working in the mill and working with Dad. About 3.5 years later, there was a farm come up for sale, and Gilchrist thought he'd like to buy it. He went into the bank, and the bank manager says, "Well, you have no savings. What collateral have you?" And Gilchrist dumped the box in front of him. And in that box was every single pay packet from that mill from the day he started. Only one opened. The bank manager said, "You've got the loan." Now, he died at 62, but his sons, when he died, his property would have been worth millions. One of his sons has just retired from milking now, and he was milking 500 cows.
Bob, you are getting quite emotional. What is it about that story that really gets to you?
The emotional part of that is how good this country is, and it almost gets to me. People say they can't afford a house. They can't, because they spend all their money on fancy cars and fancy phones and fancy meals and everything else.
Bob, thank you very much. Again, really appreciate talking to you this morning. Does Bob make a good point there? Because people can't save these days. Is he right?
excuse me. It's such a good point. I got a bit choked up too then.
Yeah, so did
I. So beautiful. I think the interesting point is the family culture. You know, these two brothers who grew up with this high importance on saving. And I think it's this, we're fighting against instant gratification now, and everything that we see, everything that we touch is designed to make us want to buy things. You know, we're getting bombarded with advertising on our phones and on TV, and I think that's really hard to overcome. So some people will say, yeah, but I need those things, and they've confused need with want because of our cultural differences.
It wasn't like that in your day, was it, Fran?
Well, that's true. I grew up with parents who'd just come through a world war, and that had a huge effect on the way that we were brought up, I believe. There was never a culture of there being plenty. There was always a culture of there being limited amounts of things. Everything had to be prized, and things weren't to be wasted. I think it's a vastly different situation today.
Trish on the text says, I bought an investment property 11 years ago. It is worth less than when I bought it. I also have shares which are going down. I also have super, which is not doing that well either. And they were on the news at 9 a.m, but I missed the start of the article. I think she's talking about BT there. It doesn't look like I'll be retiring anytime soon. Sometimes it's luck. I've tried to be frugal and invest, but it's getting me nowhere. Well, Trish, thank you for that. Lacey?
I totally agree. There is a huge portion of luck in there and about timing. And I'm just lucky that I came out into a mining boom and there was lots of money around. It was very fortunate timing. That is part of what you have to plan for. You have to plan for what's going to happen in the future, and we know that prices are going to cycle. So what I would ask is there are always going to be times when prices go down, your ability to hang on through that because you have other sources of income, say your work or another type of investment, is really important. So you haven't got all your eggs in one basket. But it's a very common story in Perth, because when you think about 10 years ago in the boom, the prices were rising very swiftly, like 50% over a couple of years. And a lot of people thought, oh, I better get in now. But buying when prices are going up is, of course, a recipe for potentially paying too much.
And seeing the evidence of that now.
Absolutely. And I think it's inevitable that prices inevitably go down at some point. That's just what cycles do with economies, and you have to be prepared to hang on.
We're hearing today, though, that a lot of this appeals to younger people. Sort of, as we're talking, those people in their 30s. Okay, so your mum, Fran, talked about doing it in her 40s. When is it too late, or is this still achievable in your 50s?
Well, I think the point, 60s? Well, it's a good point, really good point, because there will be people listening who are at that point going, well, I'm only 5 or 10 years away.
Or I've missed the boat.
Exactly. And I think the question is about how much you can earn and how little you can live on in that period of time. So in your 50s and 60s, with any luck, you might be like Jonathan's talking about, kids are out of home, you can have lower living expenses, you could potentially move into something cheaper, and you are likely to be earning a fair bit of money if you're still at full-time because you're at the peak of your career. The thing is that some people will drop off and go to part-time and maybe be earning less, but it's your ability to earn as much money as you can in that period and then spend as little as you can. You can get there in a short period of time, like 10 years. My point with people when they say, oh, well, I'm 60, should I start? And I'm like, well, at least you're going to be better off. No matter what you do, you'll be better off, even if you don't get to financial independence. Having some money in assets that's going to produce some income to supplement a pension is going to make a difference to your lifestyle. So there's no reason not to start just because you're approaching retirement.
And as Fran was talking about, you know, your choice was property and some investments in shares. Is that the best starting point?
It can be.
And how much do you need to have to be able to do that?
Yeah. So it's very individual what's a good investment for you. So a financial advisor would generally look at your risk tolerance and your age. I think there's a lot more in it about how well you'll sleep at night. So if you don't like debt, don't take on debt.
Yeah.
If you find looking at the share market and the prices on the TV stressful, don't buy shares. You need to be realistic about what works for you. I think with property, because it takes a long time to pay off and a long time to see the growth, particularly in this market, it might be a decade before you see significant growth. You'd want to think long and hard about taking on debt for property at this point in your life if you're in your 50s or 60s now, if it's a retirement strategy. I think the point with shares is that you can start without taking on debt. You can start with as little as a few hundred dollars. So that's a great option for people. Things like listed index funds, those kinds of things you can get interested in. Any kind of dividend that you're going to earn is going to then just give you a little supplemental income later on in life.
So play it safe?
I would definitely. And I guess that's what I've learned a lot from Fran is slow and steady and sensible will outplay some of the high risk stuff. Certainly there will be people who've taken high risk investments and they've paid off. But for every one of those, you're going to hear at least, you know, 6 or 7 people that it failed for because they got the timing wrong. So if you're going to do stuff that's risky in the hope of a great reward, make sure you've got a backup plan.
Fran, was it nerve-wracking doing that? Because you were sort of jumping into the unknown a little bit for you.
Absolutely. It wasn't really nerve-wracking, I wouldn't say. I've always had the attitude that if you're going to risk anything, then risk something that you can't won't it won't be the end of the world if you lose it. That's always been my attitude when I've gone into alternate things, not with the house, obviously, but when I started to buy shares, I only invested money that wouldn't ruin me completely if the shares went down or if the dividends didn't pay. So I think that it was never nerve-wracking from my perspective. As Lacey has indicated, I am a fairly cautious person and I don't take enormous risks.
I know there's a lot of you out there that are doing this or may have already done it, as Mike has done on the text. He says, FIRE is totally doable. Done it, and I know. You have to change your mind, and it's from the beginning. Thinking mainstream or average never gets you anywhere, so stop trying to fit in like sheep. I'm 52 years old in a few weeks and have no longer working, haven't been working for a few years for many reasons. I'm not old, I'm not retired, but I've escaped the revolting slave system called job and work. I'm going to talk about that in a moment too, because it's about being time rich, which is really important in his chat as well. John is 55, still working. John, how's retirement looking?
Yeah, retirement's looking really good for myself and my wife. We're planning on retiring in 2 years when I'm 57, and we've been working towards this goal for the past probably 20, 25 years now.
How are you doing it? Can you tell us what you've been doing?
Well, the first thing...
Share your secrets, John.
First thing we did was move to Australia because there was more opportunity, and we realised that, and that was not a mistake.
And where had you come from, John?
We came from New Zealand.
Right.
And then we bought our home, and then we decided that we would focus on paying off the mortgage as quickly as possible, which we did over a period of 7 years. Once the mortgage was gone, it was unbelievable, the freedom that that offered. All of a sudden you felt you were in a different position. And, of course, you had a lot more income coming in that wasn't going out straight away. So we needed a strategy to start saving. So we didn't think property at the time was a good idea. So we just started investing into super when we could, and then also investing in shares, but mainly blue chip shares with a dividend yield. And then over time, that just progressed until the point where at the moment, between bank interest and dividends, we get over $50,000 a year.
Wow. John, that's impressive. I can see Lacey and Fran are impressed. They're nodding. Mm-hmm. Now, John, you're 55 and still working. What does the next 10 years for you look like? I mean, how long do you want to work for?
I'll work till I'm 57, and that'll be the same for my wife. So we'll both stop work then. And from there, we shouldn't have any problems at all. We don't spend $50,000 a year anyway. We're currently making that on interest. Plus, you've got to realise too that I think here in Australia, even if after 20 or 30 years of retirement, your funds are getting a lot lower, when you start running out of personal funds, there will always be something to fall back on from the government. And if you do have a roof over your head, then you're always going to be safe.
And what do you do without, John? How do you live frugally?
We actually don't do without. We still travel quite a lot. Even during this period when we were saving, we still sent our only child to a private school. We probably take an international trip every 2 years, a holiday, a family holiday. We're just very, very careful. We buy the cheaper items in the supermarkets. We don't invest in flash cars. We don't upgrade cars. We sort of run them into the ground. We just spend what we think that we can afford. So when your income comes in, you take a percentage, you put that away, that's what you're going to save, and then you make sure you live within your means on the rest. If you want something, you save for it.
Yeah, good on you, John. That's what my father used to say. No credit cards in our household. Hey, John, thank you so much. And retirement's only 2 years away, so best of luck with that.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I bet you are. Lacey, John raises some good points there.
Really important. And I think everyone that's sitting there thinking, I can't save that much, John just gave you the answer. Just save first. Make that the first thing that you do with your income and make it automated and just get a little bit more ambitious each time, because if it's in savings and you need it, you're eating baked beans on toast, you can always get to it. But once it's spent, it's gone. And then whatever's left over to spend, you spend it as you want and the way that makes you happy and meets your needs.
Mike on the text says, it's not about how much you earn, it's how little you can learn to live off. Forget being normal. Be yourself. Make your life free from the shallow consumption. Get rich slowly. Organise growth and sustainability income. That's from Mike. Mike, thank you. And he makes a good point there, because it's not about how much you earn, because people will say, I can't do this on the pay packet that I get. Mm-hmm. It's your outgoings.
Absolutely.
So it's a complete shift in the way you think. And the
Absolutely.
Way you live. That's very hard for a lot of people.
It is. And I think I'm so lucky that I got it early in life. It would be very hard to change that behaviour in your 40s and 50s, which makes it, when people do achieve that, all the more impressive, I think. But, yeah, if you can start when you're young with that programming, it'll be that much easier for you. But it's like any habit, giving up smoking or stopping eating junk food. It's a habit, spending. And if you can teach yourself to break those kinds of habits, you can break the habit of spending as well.
Reg says, I got some advice when I was in my 20s to contribute to my super. Just $50 a week has made a huge difference in my super balance now. I'm in my mid-40s and I recommend people do it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have that option?
Absolutely. I didn't have that option. Superannuation only started, of course, when I was more than halfway through my working life, and the early rates were 2-3% of your income. It was nothing. When I finished work, I had $100,000 in my superannuation account. So for me, it wasn't a consideration. However, today it's a huge consideration for the young people to think about it, and even people that say that they cannot save. They are already saving. Your superannuation fund from the day you start working is actually a savings account in your name, money you have control over, and you have control over how it's invested and what comes out of it. And if you can't save, if you really can't save, the least you can do is pay attention to what is going on in your superannuation fund and make the most of it. Review it every year, make sure that you're not paying for things you don't need, unnecessary insurances, that it's invested where you need it to be invested, and so on.
Because I imagine there's I wonder how many people there are out there that get that annual statement and go, oh, yeah, because it's a long-term thing. It's something you don't need to worry about for another 30 or 40 years, and they just file it away and don't take notice. Would that be quite common?
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people don't realise that they've got multiple superannuation accounts that they're paying membership fees on, a fixed fee. And so you only need to pay one of those. So, yeah, it's one of those things of, yeah, it does feel disconnected from you because you can't touch the money now, but you should make the most that you can with it, because you wouldn't throw that money away. So I would also add to Fran's comments about the insurance, go and check your fees. Go and look at what your fees are, and every year have a think about whether you can do better.
Let's go to Rodney. Rodney doesn't like the word, you know, you don't like the word frugal, do you?
No, it's an interesting conversation, but I mean, some people have actually picked up on it and mentioned it. I don't think that you should live frugally, but you should live within your means, you know. Consider the debt, living without, try to live without debt, or just, we just had a mortgage and may do apart from that. But, you know, the other argument is I've got a son who is living for the day. I mean, he just sort of feels that he doesn't know what is around the corner, so he's enjoying himself and really hasn't considered the future at the moment. He's 30.
And does that concern you, Rodney, as a father?
Oh, he's probably hoping to come back as our paid carer, I think, eventually. But I don't know. Look, it does in one respect. But look, he's got a reasonable education. He's reasonably sensible in other respects. But I think he will make good later in life, hopefully. But don't forget, there's also a lot of the baby boomers, as we were in, had a lot of luck with regard to financial finances as well. But I think, frugal is the wrong word. I think one should live within their means and, hopefully the future will then look after itself.
Oh, good on you, Rodney. Thank you very much. Isn't it interesting, though, how he raises a really interesting point, that suddenly when the conversation is about as Rodney said, living beyond your means. We're being frugal. Are we a generation of overspenders?
I think the psychology of using the word frugal makes you immediately feel like you're missing out on something, and FOMO is a very big thing in our generation. And I would agree that it maybe for some people makes them go, oh, that sounds yucky. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, jam and toast for dinner for the next
exactly.
2 years.
But to be blunt, I think it's more about prioritising what you spend on. And you can call it whatever you like. And like living within your means describes it beautifully. I'm always just looking for one word so I can say it quickly, which is why I tend to land on frugal. It's about prioritising what you're going to spend on that makes you happy. So, for example, in our household, we don't care much about cars, so we drive very cheap cars, but we care a lot about food, so we buy nice food. I'd much rather have nice steaks and nice cheese than have a fancy car, and I prioritise those things accordingly. So it's not about feeling deprived. It's about being thoughtful with what you're spending your money on and getting bang for your buck and not letting it just fritter away.
Which is very much what your mum was doing.
Absolutely. Yes, that absolutely describes it.
Jared says on the text, on saving too easy, you spend less than you earn. People who have never had to go without can't do it. Everyone should do a year on the bones of their butt when they first start work. If you want to help your children, give them the real estate section from the West Australian, a UBD and a suitcase for their 17th birthday. People must learn how to live on nothing. And Jared, we are a generation that doesn't know how to do that.
It's a very good point. And my generation, I'm on the borderline of millennial. Yeah, we haven't had periods of lack. We haven't had periods where we were worried about whether we'd have enough food. It's more about whether we can afford the third or fourth pair of jeans, it doesn't create a feeling of needing to really focus on it.
Mark raises a good point on the text as well, which is important when we talk about this FIRE movement. He says, one other great upside to the FIRE movement is that there will hopefully be a lot more younger people to volunteer for various community organisations, because most are struggling to find volunteers with such a time-poor, overworked society. You don't want to retire early and literally be bored to death. Mark, thank you, because that's immediately what came to my mind when I was reading up on this is, I don't want to be retired at 30 or 40. I'd go mad. I'd drive my husband and children mad. It's not about that, is it? It's not about retiring at 30.
Not at all. And if you look at people like Mr. Money Mustache and the Frugal Woods, they don't actually retire. They are off writing books, running memberships, they're talking to people and they're volunteering. And that's actually where I spend most of my time now, is on volunteering and running my businesses, because that's what gives me joy. It's not about doing nothing. It's about being time rich, that comment you just made about time poor, the opposite of that. And that is really being able to choose how you spend your time, because you don't have to spend it working to earn a wage. And I think I've met very few people who've retired early and who've actually sat around for more than about 6 months, because sipping cocktails on a beach gets boring.
Yeah, it's great once or twice. So Fran, yeah. When did you officially retire?
I officially retired at 63, so that's 5 years ago now. And at that time I took up a full-time job looking after grandchildren. So
very important job. My mum's done that same job. Very important.
And one that's incredibly joyful too, and couldn't be a better use of my so-called retirement than doing what I am doing, and also, of course, being involved so heavily in the Money School business and helping Lacey to do what she wants to do with her life. So it hasn't been, it was never for me about sitting around doing nothing, that's for sure.
And 63, was that a target you had set yourself?
No, it just happened to occur at that time. I'd been made redundant a couple of years beforehand, so I'd filled in the time with another job, but it wasn't a career path that I was particularly interested in staying in. And at the same time, I had young grandchildren appear on the scene and made the decision that time would particularly do it. I could easily have worked for longer if I'd felt so inclined, but it suited us all at the time, and so that was not a planned age, no.
But it was, you know, that's sometimes the luck plays in, doesn't it? And again,
yes.
And it just the yeah. Stars aligned. Yeah. Let's take one more call. Mike, hello.
Oh, hello, how are you?
Yeah, well, thanks,
yeah,
Mike. Mike, you need to turn your radio down. I need to let Mike turn his radio down because we're on a delay. Mike, have you turned your radio down?
Yes,
okay. I have. Right. What's your question?
Look, I'm in my 40s. I moved from overseas when I was 30, so it's exactly 10 years now, and I've saved quite a bit. I've invested in one of the commercial properties and actually started my own business in it, and Within 8 years, it should be paid off, and I'll have a around 3,000 per month rental income from that one. I was wondering, what are your tips regarding investing in share market if I wanted to invest into share market now?
Oh, it's a great time to start thinking about it. Excellent if you've got some cash flow. I think the point with shares is you need to think about how much time you want to spend on your investing. So do you want to be actively following shares and picking shares and thinking about which companies you want to buy? Or do you want something that's a bit more set and forget so you don't have to spend your time there? Because really, it can be a full-time job managing your investments depending on how you choose to go. So I think there's quite a few options that are out there. Definitely do some reading. You can do things like index funds, which mean that you just buy one share and it's like getting a little piece of heaps of other shares, you know, 200 or so, and then they have dividend reinvestment plans. So they're a great set and forget option. Or you can start investigating specific companies that you might be interested in buying, and if you know a lot about their industries or you've got a good feel for how the company is going to perform. If you want to spend a lot of time on share trading, you could look at stuff like day trading, but that is literally a full-time job looking at charts, and you have to be pretty interested in maths.
So do your research, Mike. Absolutely. That's certainly the key. And we'll finish up on this great text from Steve. Hi, my wife and I decided to get a savings plan going 18 years ago at age 37 to fund a trip to Italy for 6 months. Lucky you. We created a budget and then saved one wage while using the other to live and pay the bills. 5 years later, we enjoyed that holiday in Europe and now are on the path to FIRE. Good luck with that, Steve. Thanks for sharing some good advice today to Lacey Filipich and to your mum, Fran White. Good to have you in. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much, Nadia.
Focus Perth with Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth.